Happy 2021, everyone, and welcome back to the Behind the Science, the podcast of the Asia Pacific Career Development Journal. My name is Dr. Brian Hutchison. I am your host and also the editor for APCDJ. So, like many of us at the beginning of the new year, I have come out of a time of self-reflection and thoughtfulness and planning for the future. And I've really been applying that with some mentorship to this podcast. I think most of you know that I've been a guest on some podcasts, but haven't been a host until quite recently, and found myself sort of stuck in the month of December, trying to think about the direction and what it is that I wanted to do with this public medium. Luckily, I got some great mentorship from Dr. Alfredo Palacios, who hosts a podcast called Theory of Change. And the biggest piece of advice I took away from him was have fun doing what you love to do. And so I'd like to do some different things with Behind the Science of Career Development in 2021, starting with this very first episode. So I met Fredo, as he goes by, the host of Theory of Change. He asked me to be a guest, and we started to talk about podcasting and how I was trying to work my way into becoming an effective host. And so what I'd like to do, with his permission, is cross-brand this first episode of 2021. And so you're going to get to listen to an episode under the Behind the Science of Career Development label, but that's actually an original episode of the Theory of Change podcast, where he is interviewing me about having an adaptive career mindset for the 21st century world of work. And so without further ado, I'm going to let you enjoy Fredo and I talking about career development in the modern context. We've created this culture around work that A, doesn't fit the way our neurobiology operates. It's been about a decision and then goal attainment. And the more we understand, you know, the way humans work, you know, habits are more important than goals. And I really think about career as vectors and pathways versus decisions.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Theory of Change podcast. So we're making this episode early January, and I want to point out that many of us, especially after the new year, especially a lot of us looking back on the year that we just had, may have change on their mind. And I wanted to bring a conversation about career to our podcast. And note that the guest that I have on, which I'll allow him to introduce himself here in a moment, him and I will be talking about ways that we can probably reconceptualize how we look at career, and maybe ways that people who are looking to make a change in this area, or maybe ways that people are looking to rethink their careers or jobs and reorient them around their lives can maybe benefit from. So I won't go on any further without letting my guest introduce himself. So let's take a moment to hear from Dr. Brian Hutchison.
Hey, Fredo, thanks a lot. So first of all, I got to say I'm a big fan, as you already know, but as a habitual listener of Theory of Change, can't wait to be a part of what I listen to and subscribe to. So my name is Brian Hutchison. Let's see, it's year 13 as a counselor educator and year 20 for me in counseling roles. And so basically I split my work time between being a counselor educator and then funneling everything else through my personal brand that I call Global Career Guy. So it's really about having a career development and work focus on mental health, wellness, school engagement, and social justice. And through that, I do client work, clinical supervision, speaking, training, and all of that kind of stuff.
For those who may be unfamiliar with the counseling profession or may not have heard the other episodes that we've had on career counseling, it can serve as a reminder for folks that career work is mental health counseling work. Mm-hmm. And I think that distinguishing this as its own sort of branch of our profession is a good place to start, because with it comes its own unique theories and perspectives and ways to work with people who are struggling.
Yeah. And I even take a step further, probably in the last 6 or 7 years, I don't train career counselors because that's really not a big part of the field out there when we look at the trends. And so I think all mental health, school-based, family therapists,
have to do counseling work for career concerns as part of their practice. I currently, clinical supervision, and I call it career-focused clinical supervision, is a big part of my private practice work. And I currently supervise and coach 6 working counselors. So postgraduate counselors that are either working towards licensure or just trying to improve, you know, their work in the field, including marriage and family work, work with children, and individual work. And I got to say, if I look through the case notes every week of, you know, the 100+ clients, there are career concerns present in over 50% of the cases over time, easily. And so I really think personally that we need to give counseling a similar treatment that we did with multicultural counseling many years ago, and that we do today with social justice counseling, and just say, this is something that's present in people's lives. It impacts their mental health and their human development. And we don't give ourselves permission to turn away from that when it comes up in session, because it's the main thing that determines whether or not career concerns are addressed, not whether or not they're there, but whether or not the counselor turns towards them or turns away from them.
Yeah, or maybe takes a moment to consider, this isn't for me, or this isn't the type of counseling I'm doing at the moment. But I think one of the things that really sticks out for me that you said is there's a huge amount of people, not sure if we could ever calculate the exact percent, but it's a large number of people who may have a number of different concerns about their career. And now when we say concerns, we don't always mean that, like, I hate my job, I need to totally relocate or whatever, right?
Right.
So concerns can range. Can we maybe talk about the range of concerns that typically you guys talk about?
Sure. Yeah. And again, for me, the big thing is how it intersects with life. In fact, a lot of my public work in the career domain is to try to convince career professionals, career counselors, career coaches, to do what I call uncenter work to recenter life, to put the frame and the context of career phenomena in counseling or coaching in the broader landscape of you're living a life here, right? And it intersects with that life. And so where I see that intersection happen most often is in relationships, how it's impacting romantic or partnerships relationships, how it's impacting parenting relationships, and how it's impacting friendships. And so, and that can be anything from how career impacts the rhythm of your day and your life, either through the working hours that you have. So think service workers that are working shifts till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Or people who have like a long commute, spend 5
right.
hours a
or
day.
Or people that have a long commute. Or boundaries, right? You and I are both faculty, so I think we're pretty familiar with how faculty life overruns the boundaries of work and life, and what impact that can have on child rearing, relationship building, community-centric perspectives and relationships. And so for me, that's the number one thing. And then, you know, the other piece is how it impacts your life, the way you live and the patterns of behaviors.
Yeah.
Because we know that it is our subconscious or unconscious behaviors over time that have outcomes like happiness, wellness, healthiness, and work greatly impacts those things.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing that comes to mind when we start to talk about the impact of work on life is the part about work that seems to be just mandatory for folks, right? There are some people who are in a position where I have no other option than to do what I'm doing now, or I can't pay the bill. You know, my water gets turned off, those types of things. And so we know that career concerns can go anywhere from being folks who are in really, you know, deep crisis. Or there are some folks who, like, I think if we were to look at it in a Maslow's hierarchy, have already accomplished a lot of those levels and are starting to think about how they can further enhance their success or further enhance their position in a job or a career that they like. So there's a wide range. And I think people listening are all somewhere in there, right? Every one of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love to talk about my dad. So my dad, you know, I grew up very working class, and he was, I think when I was 3 or 4, he got a job as a lineman for the electric company. And this is a rural electric company. So you actually have to hike in to where the lines are broken or down. You have to put on a belt and spikes on your heels. You have to climb a pole 30, 40, 50 feet in the air in the middle of the woods. And so he made that choice just to get a job, right? Because we needed a job because we didn't have work in the family when he took that job. And that ended up being an abbreviated career. Now, why was it abbreviated? Because of disability. And the impact it had on me was I still have these dreams of waking up in the middle of the night during a storm, knowing that if it's a big storm, my father wasn't home for 4, 5, 6 days at a time. They would sleep out in the truck, you know? And I remember the 2 stories before I was in middle school of men that died doing that work that he knew when they were out on the site. And so there's a threat and a danger to work. But if you fast forward to 15 years ago, you know, my father retired on disability in his mid-50s, which is almost my age here in a few years, because that early he had to have 1 knee and 2 hip replacements because of climbing poles every day for his life. And so and I'm not saying that that's not good work, but when we just make the choice out of desperate need, right, to support our life and our family, we don't have a lot of capacity or we don't show a lot of capacity to talk about the accumulative effects over time. And then it's the same thing for people like you and I in white collar work, lower back problems, right? Too much belly problems because we're so sedentary. And so I think that there are shared elements of this across social classes too, and across the types of work that we either think about or have access to.
Yeah, you know, and I think that trajectory over time is something that's hard to keep in mind regularly. You know, it's one of those things, like a belly accumulates slow over time and you sort of notice it once it's arrived.
Yep.
But you don't really feel it as it's coming on. And I think sometimes that type of thing can lead to just work. And it reminds me of sort of the plight of the main characters in The Office who, like, in the end found another job that was for them, you know, and we're like, you know, it was great being in this, working for this paper company now, you know, of course, because I had a lifetime of memories. Yep. Or whatever. But at some point they had to take this risk, right? And you show people who are struggling to shift that and moving away from work that you've established out of, you know, desperation or for whatever reason, right, is always mm-hmm. going to be some type of transition yeah. period, some type of change. You know, mm-hmm. partly what I'm thinking yeah. too, especially as we start talking, are ways that, you know, it's no secret to anybody listening that we're living in some really bizarre years. We're maybe going on our second year yeah. of really strong unpredictability. And I think mm-hmm. even last mm-hmm. night, so we're recording this on the 7th. So last night, everybody got to witness complete and utter chaos in a pillar of our country that yeah. we thought was absolutely protected.
Yeah.
And when we start to think about ways that stress and the stress of simply being here during all of those things can accumulate to the type of work stress and crisis that we're talking about. You know, mm-hmm. I think, like you said, recentering life and moving away from work is a really great first step mm-hmm. at wondering, where should I go? Or at least mm-hmm. how should I begin to think about my career? Because partially this type of thing makes ways for opportunity. Right. And changing with
yeah.
Might be yep. an asset for folks.
Mm-hmm. I think about that a lot. Can I just yeah. do one pivot first? I think I also don't want to put all of the responsibility on the worker. I think that's one of the great sort of sins of our profession, if you will. I think in the last 50 years is we've created this culture around work that A, doesn't fit the way our neurobiology operates, right? You know, if we go back and study hunter-gatherers, they worked about 15 to 17 mm-hmm. hours a week. And so we've made a time-based stamp on work of the 40-hour work week and that came from Henry Ford. So that's what we still think about, but we work more hours than 40 hours on average in the United States, either because we're caught up in hustle culture or gig culture, or because we've just been told that more is better. I think there's some interesting things to say about like the psychology around abundance and how we're sort of genetically wired to have trust that there's going to be enough. Like, again, if you look at like tribal cultures, they never hunted and gathered food for more than 2 or 3 days at a time. And today, you know, I meet with so many clients and talk to so many people that are obsessed about a retirement that we don't know if it will be there or if it will ever come. Or I work with wealthier clients that keep thinking that more wealth is better. I mean, I think of, you know, Jeff Bezos in these past mm-hmm. 10 months. I mean, you could solve many of these problems that you're promoting your care about just by giving up the massive amount of wealth that you've accumulated while the rest of us have struggled. So all of that to say that it's really easy for the conversation to pivot and put all of the responsibility for the problem on the person. And I think it's important to communicate to clients that this isn't all on you, or at least it shouldn't all be on you.
It does. I'm thinking now, because I'm wondering like what goes into, I mean, we could speculate on what goes into something like that. Maybe I'm thinking now about the difference between, for example, the like more individualistic versus collectivist culture, which we know the United States is more based in the individual.
Yeah.
And I start to think about ways that that's expressed and we don't really know it or notice that that's also like an expression of individual or collective culture. So, for example, I think about countries whose sports are sports like soccer, who have more sort of egalitarian roles amongst the players. And then you get people like, I mean, places like the United States where we value football and baseball, where your position is there and you're replaceable if you get hurt, right? I got another pitcher ready to come up. And I think sometimes that attitude we can see in our leisure.
Right.
We're sort of oriented toward it. And I think it's no stretch for me, I guess, to understand what you're saying, that, that it makes sense that that would same that same thing would be expressed in the way we look at work.
Yeah. And I see that expressed in the way that we look at wellness and mental health a lot, too, like work-life balance. Why aren't we talking about why employers don't create conditions where we get to live our life versus that that idea is centered, seems to always be centered on the worker? Like, it's my job to manage my time and my workflow to try to achieve this thing that actually doesn't exist, like the idea of work-life balance. But like the centering of that problem seems to be very much put on the worker, and the employers get a get out of jail free card.
Exactly. And I think we, like you said, we do this with other issues in counseling as well, especially when it comes to working with clients of color. We tend to look at problems or barriers as being sort of intrinsic within the person without actually fully conceptualizing all the external factors that put someone in that position.
Yep. I started my work in the career field at a career center at Penn State University. And one of my jobs was to run the multicultural career fair. And I feel like that was the first part of my personal awakening, because too often, what is a multicultural career fair? It's you parade in all of the students of color and you tell them how to dress corporate, i.e. white, and then you do an etiquette thing where again you're teaching them how to talk, shake hands, sit, and dine corporate, i.e. white. And it's like, and this is a university with over 1,000 corporate partners that do student recruitment. And this may have changed in the 20 years since I was there almost, but like, you know, I think it's pretty common for these multicultural efforts through university career centers to always focus on the students. And there's very little demand put on the corporations other than please keep coming back to hire our students.
Yeah. So moving into the conversation from this point forward, you know, maybe even now listeners can know when we begin to consume and have these conversations about that, spread the responsibility a little.
Yeah.
Start to consider the ways that the circumstances that you're living in are for sure partly as a result of some of the actions or decisions you've made, but also are partly of the circumstances that you just been, that you just sort of are in, the facts of our situation.
Yeah. And I'm certainly, I'm recognizing the moment that you asked a totally different question like 5 minutes ago. that's why you're in charge of the podcast.
I think this would be a really great time to sort of shift into working into something you mentioned earlier, which is the gig economy.
Yeah.
And so I was mentioning off before we started recording that I was having a conversation with somebody who rents houses and that's sort of his business. And he knows other people who sort of own properties and rent properties. And and they were talking about ways that the pandemic has caused them to consider sort of discriminating against who they allow to rent. And in particular, this person lives in a really college-oriented town, which high turnover and rent is really a lucrative situation. But I'm thinking about the people like waitstaff who suddenly may not be looked as favorably upon by their landlord, right? Whose dollar is a different dollar all of a sudden than the person whose job is, quote, pandemic proof. And so I think when we think about gig economies or ways that we can sort of find a way to free ourselves up to be more versatile or more fluid is one of the ways I think that's worth thinking about in terms of adapting to, again, a, what seems to be a really tumultuous and unpredictable time.
Yeah. And in some ways, gig economy is just rebranding the suffering of low-wage workers throughout our entire lifetimes, right? I mean, you know, being a low wage worker, they've always been gigging because they've not made enough wage to live. And so the good news with this is that now we have a name for it. It has a brand so that maybe we can talk about it in a more useful, healthy way. And it's a bit more shared because now we have this sort of hustle culture too, where people of means, white collar workers, also see themselves as doing these patterns of behaviors that we call gig economy. You know, so for me, the first step is always just understanding what it is that we're talking about. I think most often when people use the term gig economy, they're really talking about what many call the fourth industrial revolution, the technology and platform-based revolution, and how that's changing work through platforms like Airbnb, like every food service. I moved to the country in the last couple of years. All of the food service ordering apps have gone out of my mind, but like Uber. And so like we have this picture that's created this new economy. And instead, I think it's just moved people from what that economy looked like pre-technology platforms to that economy.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I would tell a client is like this, you know, you're prepared for this. It's been rebranded, but you've been here before unless you just started working recently.
Yeah.
And so how do we, you know, my simple model of career work is always understand, take a pause to clarify, and then figure out how to adapt. And so what are the real realities for you? And they're going to be different. Like, is it just straight income? Is it just like, I need to hustle and work however many hours it takes? And we see this with Uber drivers all the time that are working 36 straight hours.
Yeah.
Right? My life is to add up the number of dollars per day, per week, or per month to survive. That's a very different issue for a professional helper than I'm really trying to gain some autonomy so that I can start my own business, right? To transition from being an Uber driver to like a town car driver, where I own the town car and I'm running it as my own personal business, which is a more autonomous way to do it. So understanding for yourself, but as a helper then, understanding very clearly through the client what the reality of this situation is, what the true needs are, in a prioritized way, I think is always the first step when we start to talk about workers in the gig economy.
Starting to ask yourself why gig?
Right.
Or in a sense, like, what is it about what you described as more autonomous work? You know, and even if it wasn't the I own my own town car type of situation, but I want to work in the afternoon so I can paint all mornings or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ways that it could be responsive in a positive way and not just responsive to, you know, social crises.
Yeah. But then it's creating broader perceptions, which is creating sort of an economy, which is the example that you were giving, right? And so, you know, if the 5-star restaurant in town makes it through this pandemic, the wait staff there may make more money per year than you and I as professors, right? And so, but the message out of the real estate sector is different,
right?
The other side of that is that there's going to be probably some pretty intense pressure put on people whose career or whose wealth is centered on real estate because of the pandemic.
Yeah. And, you know, the moment that I also feel when we describe this flux are moments when people sort of have realized that I have to start over. Mm-hmm. The time that I've put in is gone now, right? And maybe for this kind of an extreme example, but I think about athletes who get injured, for example, right? May need to have a secondary skill set, you know, and this is why sometimes we talk about ways that the gig economy is what it is. You have this opportunity, but it's also like a way of thinking as well.
Yep.
That I could, okay, stop this, move into something else, and things are going to be all right. That's a very different situation than if I felt like everything I've known is now gone and I have to start at zero.
Yeah, and I think that's another sort of adaptation we need to make when we think about career, right? So for most of us that have had a career class or a coaching class or something like that, it's been about a decision and then goal attainment. And the more we understand, you know, the way humans work, you know, habits are more important than goals. And I really think about career as vectors and pathways versus decisions. And so there are things about you that aren't going to change very much over time. So your personality type and interest is fairly stable. Your the things that you value about your character and your life are fairly stable. Your skill set, you know, you can learn new skills, but we sort of learn new skills in sort of patterns as well, right? You know, I mean, I have never taken anything musical in my life other than playing that little reed thing in elementary school, have a terrible singing voice and probably tone deaf. I'm not likely to add skills to become a professional musician at the age of almost 50. Now, but I do write and speak for a living. And so I'm planning on learning Spanish this year. And so, like, while that's a very different skill for me, it is still bundled sort of in that vector of who I am and who I've pretty much been for almost all of my life. And so if we can orient people to think about themselves in that way as a starting point, and then to think about their mindsets in the gig economy or in the 21st century world of work, I think that we're doing a lot more benefit to people as they have to navigate what's going to be a hard journey. We're not saying, you know, I hate, you know, when marketing tries to do this, but if you do my three-step career program, you're going to be on easy street coming out of the pandemic. That is not the case for anyone.
You know, and I think about some folks who just are, it's an identity shift.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And those things can't be taken lightly. And I think maybe because we do seem to take those lightly, or we do seem to separate life and work,
yep,
that it surprises people, yep, when it's harder than they thought to make this change.
Yeah. And so that's why I really like to focus on these things that don't change, right? Because it's sort of like a reframe or a bait and switch, right? It's like, so yeah, you've been told all your life that being a dental hygienist is your identity. That wasn't true. Right? Dental hygienist fit because you want to help people feel better and alleviate pain, or you have a strong value for stability and consistency in your day-to-day work life, or you need certain hours because of the way your family life is constructed, and being a dental hygienist fits those hours, right? So if I can help someone see that that's the you, right? That's the identity. And dental hygienist was just one job that fits that you. But I can help you find other roles. I can help you find other jobs. I can help you find other things that fit that too. And again, it's not your fault that that got switched up in your brain. Because everyone since middle school has been telling you that figuring out a career when you're developmentally not ready, as an aside, and then sticking with that, which has been a ridiculous idea since the 1980s, that is the, you know, that's the pathway to a good life of adulting as far as career. None of that stuff is true.
You know, and I think of folks who do hold on to those types of things, right? Who may, and then if I think about other pressures that keep people where they are, mm-hmm, if we look at perhaps, this isn't the first time on the podcast that I brought up the Das Man, which is a German word or a German, mm-hmm, phrase for as one should.
Yeah.
And the existentialists used this to refer to the they,
yep,
the collective influence on us, yep, the individual. Mm-hmm. And there are ways that I think the Das Man, or the collective value around those who may even, mm-hmm, have to have had a degree for their jobs to stick to that job, mm-hmm, is sort of hyper-present. Right. Especially when there are people who are experiencing, mm-hmm, student loan debt. Right. I can't get out of this now. I got to be able to pay, yeah, this back. Right. Or I've invested too much to turn back.
Yep.
Those are all things that I think, like you say, are coming from all around you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, the understand and clarify part of the way I think about the work before you make an adaptation is so important, because I would never say that those things aren't true for a client. But I would say that I've never had a client that had thoroughly thought those through to give me a sense that they know they are true, right? And so the messaging, particularly through childhood, about career is so strong, right? And it's still so caught up in that 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s mindset about work that that's a hard thing to root out easily. Right. I mean, you still have people that say that they can't list more than two or three jobs, or they have to be at a job for X number of years on their resume. I mean, that makes, in context of right here, right now, how little sense does that make?
You know, and I do think that I'm glad that the way that this conversation is going is really emphasizing our where our attention goes in terms of what the work is.
Yes.
And I think the point here to be said is that there are corporate values that have just sort of been ingrained and sort of we've been indoctrinated to value as well.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like there's really a way to rid ourselves of this.
Right.
In the same way that I can rid myself of knowing English. I just don't know anything else. Right. And,
right.
And, but what you're saying too, is we could really also just as a helper or anybody looking to process this, is the act of processing this with somebody who's empathizing with your experience and in a way getting a sense of where you are, that's really going to make the difference. Because often I think it dispels those corporate values, right? It brings us to your values.
And it's okay to settle on those corporate values, right? I mean, I'm a strong believer in critical awareness and critical consciousness. So it's not throwing those values out. It's choosing whether or not to keep those values or replace them with others.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's such an important element to feeling somewhere in the continuum of okay to good about your career circumstances, particularly in a chaotic world of work, particularly in a chaotic time. And if we haven't done that level of self-reflection and opting for something, then these conditions that we're currently in impact us more negatively.
Yeah, I think about the Congress people from yesterday, right, who are up 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. They just went to work, experienced a pretty significant crisis, then went back to work, right? Because there is this longstanding principle that we have, as a collective, needed to see something happen despite what was going on.
Yeah.
And I think something like that comes up for me when I think about people who find the sort of the meaning and the nutrients in what they're doing. That's something that we might consider to be extreme, like, you know, of course, a late work night or a night where you fear for your life on the clock, to be just a normal way of working, a normal part of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think meaning and purpose can be very resilient things to hold about anything. Right? Like we can withstand a lot more hardship. We can persevere a lot more if we have what we would call a sense of meaning or purpose about just about anything. But at the same time, I think as you were referencing earlier, I think that there's this whole sort of other sort of conversation out there where we're putting the idea that work has to be about passion for you to be doing it right. It has to be about meaning and purpose for you to be doing it right. And again, I just think that that's another non-worker serving idea.
That was my impression of that yesterday. But then I also think about, like you were talking about earlier, like a gig economy, that there's no obligation to find ultimate meaning in your job. You know, maybe I do want to just show up and get paid to, you know, insert whatever mundane task here. That isn't necessarily to be viewed as a problem or the focus of one's career issue. So both can be true.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, for me, the difference is if we're putting that on clients and sort of perpetuating an idea that's not a bad idea, but can be a harmful to not useful idea for some clients, instead of just being open to finding out what the client wants from work, to finding out what, you know, if meaning, purpose, or passion is important to them through work, right? And if we think about it, you know, I always think about the difference between what we condition people to think about their lives versus the people that we idolize or our heroes. You know, like we have these school systems where it's like, you know, progress through, get the right grades, go to the right school, choose the right major, graduate on time. And it's like none of the people that we idolize in fiction or movies are cogs in a machine that flow that with that much linearity through things. They take risks. They have setbacks. They do something non-linear, asynchronous with the way other people do them. And it's almost like we've taken the permission away from people to be that way a lot of times. And so how do we give them more permission to find themselves?
Yeah. And it's not just like a question for people trying to help other people. That's a question for everybody listening right in this moment.
Heck,
right?
Yeah.
Because I remember listening to this really cool podcast episode. It was years ago on the Freakonomics podcast with Stephen Dubner. And he made a case on the upside of quitting and brings up all the situations, especially situations in history, where you know, we've invested way too much. We've used that argument, invested way too much to quit now, but probably should have and probably lost more for not quitting, right? So I think that one of the things that comes to my mind is what's keeping you feeling like you're stuck? And that feeling, to me, I think as we talk, becomes to be more of an illusion than I once really thought.
Yes.
And maybe I've seen other illustrations of this, like, you know, the elephant that's chained to just the one little tiny spike in the ground, right? Who can clearly pick it up and walk off, but sort of feels there. So in terms of changing like our mindsets about that, that I think is something that will extend far beyond whatever our job is, just to feel like I have the autonomy to not be stuck in a particular problem or have the autonomy to influence my life in a way for the better is a really great way to start looking at where should I work and how should I work?
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, I think I mentioned it earlier, but that goes back to that. And again, I don't think this is the workers' issue, but we've conditioned sort of a distrust of future abundance into the worker. You know, the thinking is that there's, you know, if you leave, there's no guarantee that you can get another job as good as this one. Yeah, but there's no guarantee that you won't eventually get a job that's much more abundant than this one, or that makes you happier, or that makes you wealthier, or that makes you freer. Organizations love predictability just as much as human beings do, right? And so if we keep employees stuck, you know, they may not be the best employee, but they're predictable because they're the employee that we know. And so I just don't feel like there's a lot of drive out of the human resources side of career development to encourage employees to be happy or to find the best job that fits them if it doesn't serve the employer very much. I fear that the career development side, the career counseling and the career coaching side has bought into that mindset a little too much as well.
Well, and I think that makes sense too, in a way of like trying to challenge what that movement mindset is, because there's also, again, like we said earlier, a virtue in being a loyal employee, right? Therefore, leaving is disloyal.
Yeah.
And that extends beyond the career conversation into ourselves. And that's what we're really trying to, to merge. So,
And in some ways that's unfair because we see time and time again that that value, while it may be promoted by an organization, is not always reciprocated.
You know, and there was so I've done work on construction sites, installing carpet before, and that was some of a feeling that you get from when you're on a construction site. You work with a number of different people from all kinds of different trades, right? So you have electricians, you have people building the drywall, you have all these people working together. And this sort of, like you said, machine, like, it sends the message that if you did not want to be there or if you do not want this job, that we'll find just another person like you, that I'm picking from an ocean of people doing your job to take your place if you leave. And so that's just a really tough way to be motivated to stay. You know, that it creates this only option type feeling. Now, that was just one of the many examples. I'm sure that it exists in all these other places, right? We talked about ways that people feel stuck because I have a degree in this, right? Or people feel stuck because I've, and I think when you help people further understand ways that they can transcend their circumstance and sort of move into another role in society is a core theme of what we're talking about today, is that career work as justice work. That when we talk about these types of issues in a career counseling context, we're also talking about social justice issues at large.
Absolutely. I do this thought experiment that I think I can do in like 30 seconds, but I ask audiences to think that their job now is to be a public health administrator for a community of, say, 10,000 people. And we'll use the pandemic. Because of the pandemic, there's a huge budget cut. And so you have to eliminate either the town doctor or the trash collector. And your main mission is overall public health. What's the right answer, right? And there is no right answer, but we've created, and this is across all cultures consistently, we've created a hierarchy of work that is not based on merit. It is not based on contribution, okay? I have now gone, because I've been socially isolated, I've gone to the doctor once in the last 2 years, but I couldn't go a month without my trash being collected, especially in the summertime, without there being a cholera epidemic or something. And so we need to take a way to take this sort of ladder-like hierarchy of work that isn't really based on anything useful and have a better picture of how work spreads out across communities, across you know, humanity and start to value it differently. And so for me, that's the stage for thinking about work from a social justice perspective. The other lens, of course, is that in any system, the access to the better parts of the system are organized in such a way that historically marginalized groups, people of color, women, people with disabilities, indigenous people, immigrants, are being organized to the bottom rungs of that hierarchy in a systematic way. And so for me, it's two lenses. It's not, it's one, recognizing that that hierarchy that isn't based on anything useful exists, right? So to make all work valuable in what the International Labor Organization would say, decent work for all. But then the second part is the social justice paradigm, which is, well, what are the opportunities and barriers built into the system that's organizing people by their historic marginalization and their current marginalization.
Yeah, for listeners who are listening now, a few episodes back this summer, we made an episode with Dr. Christian Chan, who talked about the gendered workplace and ways that your experience in the workplace can often mirror or parallel other experiences that you have in society, especially people who have marginalized identities in whatever way. And I think these are all interesting things to meld into a conversation about career. Because I think, like you said, I think we've been having far too many conversations about career without there being an element with regard to social justice.
Absolutely.
But then to keep them in separate spots. Yeah.
And again, to keep them in separate spots. And again, I think it has to be that second thing too, is that we have to attribute the problem, not just to the worker, but to employment as well.
You know, and I think as a counseling theory, as we start to maybe adopt more postmodern perspectives, that's one of the bigger changes that's occurring in our thinking, I think, that we're stopping looking at things as being separated, that I'm having a conversation about your depression only, that I'm having a conversation about your behavior only, that we think of people as being compartmentalizable, or I mean, like being able to separate them into smaller parts, into a postmodern perspective where these are all simultaneous interacting dimensions that we need to work with, that the person is inseparable from their job, race, gender, whatever.
Yeah. And I think that our field has done the best job of that with multicultural counseling, right? Of infusing these ideas of cultural identity across everything that we're about as a counselor education profession. And I'm not comparing importance of two different factors, but if we could do the same thing with the idea of how work interacts with life across everything that we do in an infusing sort of way, I just think the benefits of that are so huge.
You know, and I think the intersectionality literature that we're talking about too does put class as one of those mandatory dimensions. But then when we think of class, we immediately think of, like you said, either the absence or the presence of wealth or whatever. We hardly ever think of the work-life experience as an element of that.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much there to unpack. And I think that counselors who or anybody really who are looking at career concerns, one of my greatest takeaways from our conversation now is to also spread the responsibility around. Look at larger issues that are going on. Why is the context the way it is? Why is it that you only have these choices, for example? A few episodes ago, we talked about ways that James Baldwin was the first to conceptualize white fragility, but we're all reading the newest version of this book, which we all can enjoy.
Yep.
If you want to read Robin DiAngelo, it's great, right? But there are ways that we have been put that if I were to go out and seek information on this, I don't find Baldwin first. Saying to yourself, what is it about the situation that I'm in that this is my first most accessible option? Same thing goes for a career, right? Mm-hmm. So look at the life around you or look at the circumstances that you're in and ask, why am I not choosing for more?
Right.
Or why is it that some people are choosing from less? Right. And I think that's a really interesting take on what we used to think of as career conversations or career concerns.
Yeah. And if you really look at sort of the career field, like it's set up on sort of a factory model of, you know, starting in early life or in school, it's this sort of segmented linear progression of making the right, oftentimes, decisions. And we just have to be honest about the question of, does that fit the 21st century world of work?
Yeah. Or is that an enjoyable way to look at your life even? I think about like your grade school experience where, like, let's say you were good at math. People are like, wow, you're going to go off and be a you know, insert career field here. But then as you start to get subpar grades, all the possibilities that were once at your disposal start to drop off as we realize what classes we're not good at, right? And I think that, that that's something that we need to unlearn in a real way.
Yeah. And one reason is because the world of work is no longer organized that way.
Well, and I'm glad that that's something that we can embrace. And maybe that's the message we can take into 2021. So now I want to just take a moment to thank you for taking the time to share this with us. You know, before we go, I'm thinking about folks who are listening today who want to learn more about this or who maybe who want to get to know other things, other work that you've done. What's a way that some folks could reach you or learn more?
Sure. Yeah. So I do have that personal brand. So Global Career Guy. So my website's www.globalcareerguy.com. That is my Twitter handle. That is my Instagram handle. And everything is accessible from those points.
All right. That sounds good. I will put that link to that website in our episode description.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And so anyone who wants to access that can just scroll down or wherever you access your podcast can get a foot right into that door. But anyway, thank you for being here, you know, and I really hope that a lot of what we mentioned today can speak to some of the folks that are listening that aren't even counselors or may not even think to yourself that you have career concerns and just start to think about how to adapt a more adaptable mindset moving into what looks to be a kind of a chaotic time.
Cool. Well, this has been a blast. Yeah. Thanks so much, Fredo.
Thank you for
I appreciate you too. Yeah.
This has been another episode of the Theory of Change podcast.